Morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Morning.
First case for argument, U.S. and New Jersey versus Synergy. Mr. Trella.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. In 1977, Congress amended the Clean Air Act by adopting the New Source Review Program. The NSR program expanded upon and complemented a program that Congress had adopted in 1970, the New Source Performance Standards Program. As their names indicate, both programs were concerned primarily with new sources of air emissions, newly constructed sources and existing sources that went through what the statute referred to as a modification.
Let me start you off, if I might, Mr. Trella, because your strongest argument, it seems to me, is that Congress adopted a single definition of the term modification, the term you just used, so that the EPA ought to likewise take a single regulatory approach in applying that term. But I gather that the EPA has had had somewhat different regulatory definitions of modification even prior to 1977. So what I'm wondering is, what evidence is there that Congress meant to say that henceforth there will be just one interpretation at both the statutory and the regulatory levels?
Well, Your Honor, in fact, there were not different definitions before 1977. What you see if you go through the regulations is that the first definition of modification that EPA adopted, which was, this is for the NSPS program, which was 60.2, basically tracked the language of the statute. EPA then came out with 60.14, which said that which EPA itself, Your Honor, both at the time and recently reaffirmed in its October rulemaking, EPA has said this was not a new definition, this was not a different definition, this was a clarification. Said that emission increase, modification is a physical change that results in an increase in the emission rate, and said emission rate is an hourly rate. At about the same time, EPA adopted its regulation for the regulatory PSD program. This was prior to the statutory program. It had a definition of modification there as well, 5201D, which tracked the NSPS definition, which said it's a physical change that increases the emission rate. Now, it did not go on and say what we mean is an hourly emission rate, but again, at the time and since then, EPA has said we mean this definition to mean the same thing that we mean in NSPS, which was an hourly rate. So, Your Honor, I don't think, while it's certainly true that the regulations, you know, if you put the regulations next to one another, they don't track word for word, but they clearly mean the same thing, and importantly, EPA said at the time and since then that they meant the same thing. So I don't think that that Congress was confronted with different regulatory definitions at the time it adopted the single statutory definition.
Well, what if you had a situation where you have a deteriorating facility over many years, and if you replaced it, you would be subject to the new source regulations. But instead of doing that, you know, you rebuild it gradually, so you increase its output and it, you know, belches all these pollutants and so on. But on your theory, as long as the hourly emission rate does not increase, there's no violation. Isn't that your position?
Well, Your Honor, that's correct.
Well, that doesn't sound very sensible, does it? I mean, because I thought that your companies had represented that these old facilities, that they shouldn't be subjected to costly anti-pollution measures because they were going to be replaced. But now you have a position which enables you, by rebuilding, to defer replacement indefinitely and escape regulation.
Well, Your Honor, first of all, I don't think the companies certainly there's discussion in the legislative history that it was expected that plants would be retired and so on and so forth. I don't think the companies represented that would that was going to take place. And Congress, I think, certainly could have directly addressed that situation. For example, Congress could have said, when a plant reaches 30 years of age, if it's going to keep running, it needs to put on these sorts of enhanced pollution controls or other restrictions. Congress didn't do that. Congress said there has to be an...
Well, I don't know. Didn't it leave it to the EPA to do that, decide what to do?
Well, it may have left it to EPA back in 1970 when it first adopted the modification definition, but then EPA spoke, said it's an hourly increase, and incidentally, which was consistent
with... Well, those were the olden days when, you know, regulation was thought of in very technological terms. You know, you prescribe in great detail the inputs rather than the output. So that's a different era, isn't it? I mean,
well,
don't we agree it's much better to fix some kind of output limitation, output of pollutants, and let the companies figure out how best to achieve that?
Well, Your Honor, certainly the direction that EPA, that both the Clean Air Act and EPA regulation have gone has tended that way. As you know, now they can trade emission allowances and that sort of thing. But back then, you know, in 1970, Congress was clearly concerned about the cost and difficulty of retrofitting plants. So it said we're not going to apply this to existing capacity. It's only when you increase capacity by either building a new unit or modifying an existing one to increase emissions that this is going to apply. In 1977, it was not a different era. Congress, the legislative history reflects exactly the same concerns about the cost and difficulty of retrofitting existing plants, and Congress accordingly used exactly the same trigger for applying these programs to existing plants, which was the identical statutory definition
of
modification.
It doesn't use hourly rate, though.
No, and neither statutory definition does, but that's what the way EPA defined it, and that makes the most sense in terms of the congressional purpose, which was to regulate...
I don't understand what any of this has to do with this case. Only the D.C. Circuit can decide whether the regulations are valid. This stuff about congressional purpose seems to me entirely beside the point. We just have to figure out what the regulations mean.
Well,
that's not a question about Congress's purpose. It's a question about what the regulations say.
Well, I think you're right, Your Honor. This case is about what do the regulations say and what do they mean. But I think the congressional intent is a useful backdrop.
Why don't we talk about what the regulations say? It seems to me that what the regulations talk about is emissions per annum.
Well, and that's correct, Your Honor. But
I'm inclined to think, using my usual simple-minded and straightforward means of reading words, that that's both the beginning and the end of this case.
Well, I think that there is a simple reading, but I don't think it takes you there. Here's where I think it
doesn't take you to your position. But
I think it does, and I hope to persuade you of that. Section 5221I of the regulations is the operative NSR regulation. It's basically the meat of the program. 5221I1 says that a stationary source or modification that is subject to the requirements of subsections J through R needs to get a permit before it can begin any construction. You go to subsection 2, and it says J through R apply to major modifications, some subset of modifications. So the first question under the NSR regulations as written is, do you have a modification? Modification is a defined term in the NSR regulations. It's 5201D that I referred to before. And that defines it in terms of an increase in the emission rate. Doesn't say hourly, admittedly, but again, this is the regulation that EPA said is intended to track the NSPS definition, which does say hourly. So you need to have this hourly rate increase before you even get to this question of major modification, which is where the increase in annual emissions...
As you say, the regulation doesn't say hourly. The EPA doesn't say hourly.
Well, the EPA has said hourly. The EPA said hourly right after these regulations were adopted and for years thereafter. The change from that position by EPA is a relatively recent change.
Don't see what difference that
makes. And it's...
Yeah.
Go ahead, Your Honor.
No,
I'm sorry.
Finish your thought.
Well, and also, Your Honor, even if you skip the modification part and just look at the major modification definition and the definition of actual emissions, I think you get to the same place. Actual emissions has a single definition. There's not a separate pre-project and post-project definition. And it says you determine actual emissions by looking at a representative period prior to the date in question, use the actual hours, actual production rate, and the actual fuel that was used, the actual substances burned, to determine the actual emissions before and after. The thing that changes is the emission rate. So if you're holding those other variables constant, which the face of the regulations indicates you do, and WEPCO held that you do, where you end up is the same place. You don't get an emissions increase unless you have an increase in the hourly rate of emissions.
Well, the statutory definition of the term modification talks about changes that will increase the amount of air pollutant emitted.
Mm-hmm.
And why can't the EPA be true to that definition and yet measure increases differently depending on whether we're talking about the NSPS program or the PSD program?
Well, I believe they can't, Your Honor, because as you pointed out, the statute has the identical definition. It's not just that it uses the same word. If it used the same word, that would be enough to create a strong presumption that Congress intended the same meaning. Here we have the same definition, and Congress said modification for NSR purposes means what it means for NSPS purposes. So I think that's why EPA can't decide that a different definition applies to both.
And what is it you think it would be the... Is this just a semantic analysis, or do you think there's some problem with having total annual rather than hourly emissions be the standard?
Well, Your Honor, let me take a step back. We're not disputing that the ultimate trigger for NSR is whether there's an increase in annual emissions. Really, the question is, how do you get there? And what do you take into account when you're figuring out annual emissions? The regulations are, as Judge Easterbrook pointed out, are clear.
I don't understand that.
Okay. Well, first of all,
they either increase or they don't increase. I don't understand.
There are a number of factors that go into determining what actual emissions are. The hourly rate, the number of hours, the production rate, et cetera. Under EPA's regulations,
look. The annual increase is annual... increase in emission or annual amount of emissions, that's just a number. There are different causes, but it's just a number.
Right.
So but now what is it you fear if instead of looking at total emissions, we look at just hourly emissions? What is your problem?
I think maybe you
have a problem.
Well, I don't have a problem if we look at hourly emissions. Certainly,
Of course not. But why is it that it makes more sense to look at hourly than total?
Because hourly, and again, we're not disputing that at some point in the process of determining NSR applicability, you do look at total. The question is, what total?
Please. The total is the total that comes out of the plant.
Well, Your Honor, remember, though, that what we're talking about here is predicting in advance. This isn't a question of measuring emissions after the work was done. This is a question of forecasting. Obviously, you know your past emissions.
Well, clearly, if you're forecasting, you'd have to, if you wanted to multiply hourly an estimate of hourly by an estimate of number of hours, yeah, you can do that.
Well, and that's,
why is it that you don't want to look at the total number of hours, but just at the hourly emissions?
That's not at all our position, Your Honor, and I apologize if I haven't been clear. The total emissions computation under EPA's regulations, and as a matter of common sense, is a function of the hourly rate and the number of hours. The question under EPA's regulations, the number of hours is the number of hours representative of normal source operations, which is that 2-year period prior to the particular date at issue. What EPA is trying to do here is project some sort of future number of hours that you're going to operate, which is not permitted by the regulations. There's not a word.
No, I'm asking, why is that an improper method?
Well, it's an improper method number one, because the 1980 regulations don't permit it.
Look, I know you have a semantic argument. I wonder if there's some common sense to your position.
Well, I hope there is, Your Honor. The statute requires that the emissions...
Look, don't talk about the statute. What's the common sense of your position?
Let me just mention the statute for one second. The statute requires that the emissions increase be caused by the physical change.
I suppose this were an issue of policy. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe their interpretation is improper as a matter of semantics or something of that sort. But suppose it was just an issue of policy. So what is it about their policy that's troublesome to the companies?
There are several things about their policy that are troublesome, Your Honor. First of all, the intent here was not to apply these programs to increased use of existing capacity.
Well, now you're going back to, the analysis of intentions. So I'm just asking about policy.
The other problem, Your Honor, is remember this is the NSR part of this is a pre-project permitting program where a utility has to make a determination, and the costs of making the wrong determination either way can be enormous. They have to determine in advance whether a particular project is going to increase emissions. The hourly rate they know, that's an engineering calculation. Hours of operation and production rate, those are functions of demand, weather, fuel costs, what's going on elsewhere in their system. There's no way to predict that, and it's not related to...
There's no way to predict that? Companies don't predict...
Oh, I'm sure they do, Your Honor, but again, it's got to be caused by the physical change. And I don't know how you say that any of that is caused by the physical change.
But why isn't it appropriate to measure emissions for PSD purposes in a way that looks at potential increases in net total emissions rather than hourly emission rates? Because, as I understand it, the PSD program was adopted out of a real concern that certain areas of the country that had achieved air quality goals not experience any backsliding. So, I mean, wouldn't that be a valid reason to measure emissions differently for purposes of two different programs?
Well, Your Honor, and that's the reason that EPA does the annual calculation, because it is a measure of what is actually supposed to be happening to the air quality. But again, the question is, how do you get there and what do you take into account? And we think it's very clear that Congress was looking at increased capacity to emit. And remember, Your Honor, that any of these plants are permitted.
Back to Congress, you're gonna upset Judge Easterbrook.
Yes.
I don't want to do that.
But not the two of us, so.
But I was saying, so let me make sure I understand how this works. So what the Commission wants to do is calculate the effect of a modification on not only the hourly rate, but on the total.
On some projection of future hours.
Now, that's not a projecting demand, right? That's projecting the physical effect of the modification.
Well, no, it's not. Because this is supposed to be a measure. It's not, according to EPA, it's not a potential to emit thing. It's not how much could you run the plant. It's how much will you run the plant. And that's absolutely a function of demand and costs and a variety of other things that are not related to the physical change. EPA's position here is when you repair, if you repair an economizer tube in a plant,
it's not supposed to be just ordinary repair. It's supposed to be something more ambitious.
Well, it really is just ordinary repair because the routine repair exception has been interpreted so narrowly that it basically applies to virtually nothing. According to EPA's
that?
Position.
There must be routine repairs on these things, surely.
Well, there are, Your Honor, but again, EPA's position is that virtually every routine repair leads to an emission increase.
But maybe your problem is with their definition of routine repairs.
Well, we do have problems with that, and that's an issue in the lower court, Your Honor. It's not up in front of this court right now. But I see I'm well into my rebuttal time, so if the court has no further questions,
okay,
reserve
that.
Thank you.
Mr. Trella. Ms. Barton?
May it please the Court, Catherine Barton from the United States. I have with me Sarah Himmelhoek and Deborah Bayless from the trial team. We agree there are two questions before this court, one of statutory interpretation and one of regulatory interpretation, and it is our position that the question of statutory interpretation is jurisdictionally barred and barred by collateral estoppel. So I will move right to the question of regulatory interpretation, unless the court has other questions. We also note that those
but
are the...
Why are you moving right there, given that your opponent addressed only the former? Almost exclusively the former. I could barely get him to discuss the latter.
Well, also, Your Honor,
by the way, do you think that issue preclusion, which you call collateral estoppel, matters? Was that raised in the district court?
It wasn't raised in the district court.
That's an affirmative defense.
New York 1 was decided after all the briefing was done, and that we were not allowed to file any further substantive briefs. Furthermore, New York 1 was up on rehearing. Synergy and other parties in New York 1 had filed a petition for rehearing in that case on this exact question, so I don't think it would have been considered sufficiently firm to raise at that point anyway. So we have raised it in the first substantive briefing we've had to this court. Also, collateral estoppel can be raised by the court sua sponte, and I think given its overlap and interplay with the jurisdictional argument, it's a particularly strong argument here.
Now, what about Mr. Trella's point? He says your interpretation of regulation doesn't make any sense, any practical sense, because the company, they'd never be able to figure out the expense of one of their modifications because they wouldn't know what impact it would have on their annual emissions, since that would depend on demand factors as well as the physical or engineering consequence of the modification. So what do you say
to
that?
Your Honor, the regulations look only at emissions that result from the physical change. That is in the regulatory language.
Suppose you had some old plant, it's grinding away, it's creaky and slow and so on. It can only produce, 1,000 kilowatts a year or something. And then along come, they make this modification, and now it can produce 10,000 kilowatts a year. But they don't know whether they're going to produce 10,000 or 5,000 or something like that. If they produce 10,000... they're going to be emitting, huge quantities of pollutants and getting into trouble. That seems to be what his concern is.
Well, they can apply to the EPA for a determination as to whether they are subject to PSD if it's really that difficult to determine. And I'm afraid I'm not personally familiar with all what goes into those calculations, but I do know that the requirement that we do not there may be a little difficulty in determining what's attributable to demand increase and what's attributable to the physical change. But in a number of these cases, the WEPCO court.
But in my example, it's both. The physical change have enabled the company to meet the increased demand. So wouldn't you attribute that, or wouldn't the regulation attribute that entire increase from 1,000 to 10,000 to their modification?
Yes, it would. If based on the available historical data, you could say, yes, that demand, that's not an increase in demand in the future. That's the demand they would meet if their plant was operating basically now up to speed.
Right. Well, that's a slightly simpler case. If it just enables them to meet their historical demand, maybe they retire some other plant. But I suppose he worried about an unpredictable surge in demand. Of course, I suppose they'd make more money.
I'm sure if they have problems with our application of the regulations, they could apply to EPA for a determination and then argue over how we apply it. But here we just really have a question of law as to what the regulations actually require. And if they're somehow inappropriately applied, that's something we can argue about back in trial court.
Something I've been wondering about is of what relevance is the 2005 proposal to implement the hourly emissions rate on a nationwide basis?
I don't actually think it's of any relevance to this proceeding. It would, if we do it, it's only an initial asking for comment on several ideas. It will apply prospectively, and it will have been done because after 25 years of implementing the Clean Air Act, we've decided to look and see if there's a better way under current circumstances to proceed. But there's no question that this, that the regulation as we interpret it makes substantial reductions in pollution and emissions just in the way that Congress intended PSD and the non-attainment program to be implemented. Now, maybe I should answer some of the questions about the regulation that opposing counsel raised. They argue that you have to first apply this provision 5201. That, first of all, they waived that argument. They did not raise that argument before in district court, and industry has not come up with this argument until after, basically, they lost the statutory argument in New York 1 and now are desperate to win the regulatory argument. So nobody has ever really considered that 5201 applied from the 1980 regs on. Also, the law applicable to this case is the law that is in the Ohio and Indiana State Implementation Plans, the SIPs. And those plans incorporate the regulations at 5221B through W, I believe. They do not incorporate 5201. It is just no part of the law that is to be applied in this case. They have argued that EPA said that its regulations applied an hourly rate, and the only thing they really have for that are these two letters from Edward Reich in 1981. And what Mr. Reich relied on was the hours of operation exclusion, which this court held in WEPCO applies only to determining whether there's a physical change. That's footnote 11, and not to determining whether there's an increase in emissions. So that is immaterial in this court, and that's why most in Duke, what the court relied on was hours of operation exclusion. Synergy has not made that argument here because they understand that they're precluded by WEPCO from making that argument. It's also clear that industry understood that the 1980 regulations did not apply an hourly rate test because they sued on those regulations in 1980, and then they reached a conditional settlement with EPA in 1982 that required it to propose a potential-to-potential test, which is a test that keeps hours of operation constant. If the regulation already provided that, they didn't need that settlement, and EPA wouldn't have had to agree to it. So everybody has known from the beginning that this was not the test the industry wanted it to be. It was not an NSPS test. Also, I'd like to point out that the majority of claims in this case are under the 1992 regulations, and those regulations are absolutely clear on their face that they apply this hours of operation that are included. It says specifically in the preamble, the language is clearly not limited to an hourly emissions test. It is also incorrect that WEPCO applied an hourly emissions test. They rely solely on footnote 14. Reading footnote 14 that way would make the rest of the decision mean nothing. Basically, it would erase everything that the decision says about the difference between the two tests. It would erase the meaningfulness of the ruling on the hours of operation exclusion. And I think the
What's
logical...
the hours of operation exclusion? I don't...
The hours of operation exclusion is an exclusion in the definition of major modification. I can actually pull it out. That says that a physical change does not constitute an hours of operation, an increase in hours of operation does not constitute a physical change. The definition is it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that has at times, that was initially by its plain language, it applies only to physical change. But at times it has been read, courts, and one EPA employee once apparently seemed to have read it to apply across the board. But this court rejected that reading in footnote 11. It said, no, that just applies to market fluctuations. That's meant to say that market fluctuations don't count as a physical change, not that a construction or modification doesn't count as a physical change. And on footnote 14, I just wanted to point out that what that footnote basically says is, EPA, now that we've told you, you need to use a realistic assessment, get the information you can. You have information about how this plant is operated. Make a realistic assessment of what the future emissions are going to be based on, as if the plant were running now. It says based on present hours and conditions. That doesn't mean keep hours of operation constant. In fact, present was 1990 and the baseline was 83 to 84. So present doesn't even mean...
What does that mean? The baseline was 83?
The baseline that EPA was using for a pre-change emissions in the WEPCO case was 1983 to 1984. And WEPCO was decided in 1990. And so I'm just saying even that footnote uses the word, says use present hours and conditions to determine how the renovated plant would operate. And Synergy has said that means keep hours of operation constant. But even by its terms, it doesn't mean that. And I think it's clear what it meant was figure out if you were running the renovated plant now, basically, what would it emit?
Are you saying that the test is what would the renovated plant produce if demand were what it had been in some previous period, or what?
No, it's not. I was just trying to explain what I think that the footnote, which was not very, is a very short footnote just on remand to EPA, what it meant, because when you read it, it's a little confusing. And I think...
Suppose they make their best prediction, and then what happens? Do you then review that to determine whether the modification should be approved or what?
Generally, industry, the program has relied largely on self-reporting. So you can apply to EPA for a determination, but industry can just determine that it is not subject to PSD and then not apply for a permit. There is
now
a
what
procedure.
If it turns out they've underestimated? So they've taken a very conservative estimate of the effect of this modification on their output, and then so that they don't have to, they don't estimate they're going to cause a deterioration in air quality, and then it turns out that they have caused a deterioration. What happens to them?
I believe they could be subject to an enforcement action. Of course, we wouldn't know whether it was by mistake or lowballing. And
anybody is subject to an enforcement action. That's like saying, we could sue. The question is, what would happen?
Well, if they had increased emissions...
Is it strict liability? Would their liability be strict? Or could they argue, they had made a good faith, careful estimate and there was, unexpected...
Absolutely. I'm sure there are many considerations that could come
absolutely
in.
Absolutely what? Absolutely yes or absolutely no?
There are other considerations, in prosecutorial discretion.
Well,
and here, for the district court, there are questions before the district court of fair notice. There may be equitable questions.
I have Judge Posner's question, too, and it has to be answered yes or no. Is it a strict liability rule, or is the question whether the estimate was a reasonable engineering estimate?
I suppose the rule means
you
what
suppose.
It says.
Does that mean that you
I'm
know?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I have not faced this exact question, but the rule means what it says. It doesn't have... Do my trial lawyers want to help me? Do you want me to consult with my trial lawyers to get an answer?
Sure. You want.
It is a reasonable estimate. I apologize.
Reasonable estimate. Okay. Thank you.
Does the court have any other concerns, or I can talk about something
no,
related?
No. Talk with you.
I mean, surely you can understand their position. At the risk of whatever. Congress adopted a single statutory definition of the term modification for both the programs. And why wouldn't that normally compel the EPA to adopt one approach whether it's hourly emission rates or net total emissions, for purposes of the of both programs.
Actually, my time is up for my show.
No, go ahead.
Do you want me to answer? I think a really good example of how to look at this is in the Alabama Power decision. It's around pages 396 to 397 or 98. And what they did is they said that PSD and NSPS, those two programs, have to use the same definition of statutory definition of stationary source. And basically they said you have to stay within the scope of that definition. EPA had added on some other kinds of equipment and buildings and things to the definition. That they said, no, you can't go beyond what that definition says. But they said, but within that definition, you can interpret the component terms to mesh with the purposes of the NSPS and PSD programs. And they did interpret component terms differently. Similarly here, the D.C. Circuit has previously interpreted the very term at issue here, increase, differently for NSPS and PSD. Imply as to whether the bubble concept of how much of the plant should be looked at in determining an increase applies. So even if Congress meant sort of generally in terms of the overall, it's a very, very broad definition. There are very many parts to it. There's a question of pollutants, which actually is defined differently for the two programs. Source has been defined differently pursuant to the Alabama Power. So there's physical change, there's increases. It's too broad a concept. It's not a little tiny definition. It's a big concept. So we are implementing the concept the same in both cases, physical or operational change, increasing the amount of emissions emitted into the atmosphere. Let me.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Barton, sorry. Mr. Rosenthal?
May it please the court. My name is Robert Rosenthal. I'm an assistant attorney general from the state of New York. And I speak on behalf of the three states involved in the lower court case, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, as well as two citizens groups, Ohio Environmental Council and Hoosier Environmental Council, which represent close to 30,000 citizens of Ohio and Indiana. I want to start out by just answering some of the court's questions and respond to some of Synergy's misstatements. First, there were different definitions under the NSR and NSPS regulations when the 1977 amendments were enacted. And I refer to page 32 of our brief. There was a definition in the non-attainment NSR provisions that included an emissions test defined in terms of an allowable rate above certain threshold levels measured in tons per year, 100 tons for SO2 and 100 tons for NOx. It's completely different than the NSPS definition. And to answer the judge's second question, there's no evidence that Congress incorporated or was ever aware of the NSPS regulatory emissions test anywhere in the statutory history, as the D.C. Circuit found in New York 1. That was one of the issues that Synergy and industry raised in New York 1 and was addressed in New York 1. To answer the most recent question on whether or not the regulatory definitions of modification must be the same as a result of the single statutory definition. Both the Supreme Court in Chevron and the D.C. Circuit in Alabama Power both found that EPA could define the statutory term stationary source. There's a single statutory term in the NSPS provisions. It's in 111A3 of the statute. Modification is in 111A4, one section below. Modification incorporates the term stationary source. And both Chevron and Alabama Power signed off on EPA's quote-unquote flexible interpretation. EPA is doing nothing different by defining modification flexibly to implement the particular purposes under NSPS and NSR, which are different. One thing we would like the court to focus on is the context in which EPA adopted its 1980 regulations, showing that it's not simply that they adopted an actual annual emissions test, but that in so doing, EPA abandoned its emissions test under 1978 regulations, which is based on the capacity to emit of the unit, and it's precisely the same test that Synergy is seeking this court to have implemented below. EPA's 1978 PSD regulations were based on changes in potential emissions. The term potential emissions was defined as the capability at maximum capacity to emit a pollutant. But the court in Alabama Power vacated that definition, and EPA therefore reevaluated the statutory definition of modification. And it found that that statutory definition requires increases in actual emissions, not emissions based on capacity of the unit or potential emissions, the test that Synergy is trying to have implemented below. And EPA did this for a very particular reason. Under the 1978 regulations, it found that it required an unrealistic paper computation that, quote, could permit...
Unrealistic what computation?
Those are my words, but it was an unrealistic paper computation.
Paper?
Synergy's test is, in essence...
What's your word?
It's a paper computation.
Paper?
Paper? My New York accent.
I'm sorry.
I figured it was going to happen eventually.
Voyeurism.
It's got a little bit of the Bronx twinge in it, I guess.
Judge Posner and I moved out of New York so long ago that we no longer...
It certainly piqued the interest.
Okay,
it's sort of Bronxese, Brooklynese. But in essence, their test is, it's a paper computation. You sit down, you look at what the hourly emissions are at maximum unit capacity. This is a theoretical test. It's not based on what actually is emitted from the stack. EPA's test, by contrast, is an actual emissions test. You examine what actually comes out of the stack and is emitted into the air by measurement from continuous emission monitors, which is a real-time measurement of emissions, or by measurement of the actual coal burned, multiplied by factors that account for the chemical composition of the coal. Synergy's test doesn't do this at all. They just simply look at unit capacity, what a unit can emit at maximum hourly capacity, irrespective of whether the unit is ever operated at that level. And then they do something else counterfactual and counterintuitive. They keep utilization constant, irrespective of whether or not their own documents show that the projects themselves are intended to increase utilization. So EPA's test is the common sense test. Synergy's is the completely counterintuitive, not common sense test. One more point.
Yeah, okay. Make one.
Thank you. And that's that not only did EPA find that the potential emissions test violated the PSD provisions of the Clean Air Act, but 26 years later, New York won. The D.C. Circuit found the very exact thing. So what we have here is a test that Synergy is proposing that both violates the plain language of EPA's regulations as well as the statute. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rosenthal. Mr. Trella, how much time does he have? 1 minute? Okay, well, we won't hold you to that. You can take what you need.
Just very quickly, on the issue of preclusion point, New York 1, in fact, was decided months before the district court decision below. In fact, as the court will note, the district court decision cites New York 1. So that clear, if it was available for collateral estoppel then, and that argument's been waived.
Well, Ms. Barton said the judge wouldn't allow filing of additional substantive briefs.
Well, and additional briefs were filed discussing New York 1, and the judge apparently read them because he cited New York 1 in his decision.
Well, he could have found it elsewhere, right?
Well, he could have found...
Are you saying the...
No, I'm not... I'm not
collateral estoppel issue was presented to the judge?
No. It was not presented to the judge, but New York 1 was... and so what I'm saying...
Your argument is that the judge allowed mm-hmm. briefs. Now, what I understood the EPA's lawyer to be saying is that they asked for permission to brief the collateral estoppel.
Oh, no, Your Honor. That is not true. They asked for permission to brief New York 1. New York 1 briefs were submitted, not a word was said about collateral estoppel.
All right. So you're saying that the representation of the government's lawyer is simply false.
Well, I didn't refuse
to allow new briefs.
In fairness to the government's lawyer, I don't think she said that they asked for permission to address collateral estoppel and were denied that.
Well, she said they asked for permission to file new briefs in light of New York 1 and that the district court said no.
Well, briefs were filed, and I think what happened was there was a motion to file surreplies or something. They were filed. I think then the district court entered an order denying the motion, but New York 1 ended up being discussed in his opinion. So now to turn to the regulations just very quickly. The regulations that apply here are the 1980 regulations. The 1992 regulations, as we explain in our reply brief, provide an additional optional test. If you want to engage in certain monitoring and record keeping, you can use a particular test under those regulations. But as everybody agrees, Synergy did not take that option. EPA has repeatedly described that test as an optional test. Under the 1980 rules that apply here, looking at the actual emission calculation, you will not find a word about projecting future hours of operation or anything like that. They did add that in the 1992 regulations, and they had to because it was not in the 1980 regulations, which is really what was the deciding factor in WEBCO. And the court, I think, in WEBCO, when it was talking about present hours, was not talking
about... What do the 1980 regulations say?
The 1980 regulations say that you look at the representative pre-project period for hours of operation, production rate, and the type of fuel you're burning, and that's what you use to determine actual emissions. And you plug in the way you do it is you plug in the hourly emission rate, the pre-project and the post-project. So only if that rate goes up are you going to get, even under EPA's regulations, as they previously applied them, are you going to get an increase in the annual actual emissions.
You're saying the 1980 regulations exclude consideration of the number of hours?
I'm saying the 1980 regulations require you to use the pre-project hours that are representative of normal source operations. There's no provision, as there is in subsequent regulations, for projecting some sort of future hours of operation. And that makes sense because the increase in the hourly rate really focuses on what emissions increase was caused by the physical change. It zeroes right in on that, and that's the whole purpose of these programs.
But a physical change can increase capacity without increasing the hourly emissions rate if it enables you to operate more hours, right?
It doesn't increase capacity because...
No, of course it does. I mean, suppose you could only operate 8 hours a day for some reason. Now you make some, modification, you can operate 16 hours a day. Well, that's certainly an increase in physical capacity.
Well, it's
Are you saying the 1980 regulations exclude consideration of that possibility?
I'm saying the 1980 regulations exclude that, yes, Your Honor. The way they were written, it may be that EPA's subsequent attempts...
They don't say that.
Well, no, it doesn't say we hereby exclude,
right.
But if you work your way through the regulations, you can't get to covering that situation. And that's, in fact, why the 1992 regulations came along post-WEBCO, because
so
they needed...
This is the heart of your argument.
Well, this I think,
right?
and this goes to Judge Easterbrook's point, that why are we talking about the statute when this is about the regulations?
Right.
This is about the regulations, and when you sit down and read through the regulations... whether you start with the modification definition or go right to actual emissions, where you end up is you need an increase in the hourly emission rate.
Because the only thing you look at is...
The only thing that's changing in the calculation is the hourly emission rate. As the regulation says, you use the normal the hours and production rate representative of normal source operations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the 2-year pre-project period.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Next case for argument, United States versus